Hello and welcome to the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. My name is Goff. I am your host. And today we have an extremely special guest. I'm a big fan, so I'm really, really excited to chat to this lady. She has been working as a model and an actor and just, she's been in everything pretty much. And we're going to go through all of that stuff right now, right from the beautiful California coast of Malibu. It's Vanessa Angel. How are you doing, Vanessa?
Hi, I'm really good. Thank you. How are you?
Yeah, no, I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on our little podcast here.
I'm happy to be here.
Cool, man. So, look, I'm going to get straight into it because we don't have a lot of time here, but I was looking through your IMDb just to do a little bit of research on you, and there was two credits that I saw which I wasn't aware you were actually in. So I just want to see your memories of those projects. The first one, back in the 90s, you were in Baywatch. I'm just wondering, were you in a red swimsuit, a David Hasselhoff love interest? What was your role in Baywatch?
I was in a red bathing suit for sure.
Okay.
And I played a marine biologist called Megan. And I did three episodes. And it was one of my first jobs, actually, in L.A. And I actually wasn't even living here at that point. I was living in New York still. And I had auditioned, actually, for another role in Baywatch as a series regular. And that didn't work out. But then Doug Schwartz, who's the showrunner, really liked me. And so then he sort of thought of me when this other role came up. And I wasn't a love interest for David Hasselhoff, but they were thinking of, like, making me a regular and figuring out how to fit me into the season. Because I think it was only season two or season three, maybe.
Yeah, it was about, I think it was 92 from memory. I think I saw it was 92. So yeah.
92. So it was early Baywatch season. And I think they weren't really sure which direction to go in, but it was great. I had an amazing time. And I actually, believe it or not, I learned a lot on that show. I remember I was so green at the time. I had done a few jobs, but I was still living in New York and I was still modeling and doing commercials and trying to sort of get better at acting. But technically, I really wasn't that good. And I remember the crew was so sweet to me. And I would literally, like, walk into a scene and, like, look down at my mark. And, you know, I was so, like, technically, like, not savvy, that I remember the crew being so supportive and so sweet. And I think I probably learned more about the technical side of acting in those three episodes that really set me on the right path. Because it's, you know, it's different when you're studying in class and you're learning how to act, but you're not actually on a set, because there's so much technical stuff that you have to incorporate into being an actor when you're on film or TV. So, yeah. So it was actually, and it was just great to be shooting outside on the beach. And I mean, who doesn't like that, right?
Well, yeah, no, it sounds like a pretty cool gig for your first, one of your first ones in LA. It's from snowy New York City into a nice Malibu, Venice Beach. Didn't they film at Venice Beach?
Yeah, they filmed all over, but Topanga and I'm trying to remember. We would sort of film all over, but the main part of the beach that they used to shoot at, I think, is was the Will Rogers Beach, where there's a big lifeguard station and stuff there.
Cool. Yeah. So, now the second one I saw, which wasn't soon after that, which I wasn't aware you were in either, was Melrose Place. Can you, because Melrose,
yes.
Melrose Place, you got no idea how big that show was. Like, I was only born in 1981. So I used to watch it because it was just a massive cult show, especially for all of the teenagers. And the nightclubs in Australia here would put Melrose Place on the big screen like it was a football match, and they'd have beers and pizza nights, and it was a big
thing. Really?
Yeah, Melrose Place was a massive thing in Australia. So can you tell us about...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, what did you do in Melrose?
Well, it was a very popular show too, but I don't know if they showed it in nightclubs, but I played this character that was actually loosely based on a model who was very well known in the late 70s and 80s called Gia.
Okay.
And I don't know if you know her story. And it was actually a role that was offered to me. I didn't even have to audition for it. I think I can't even remember at this point the casting director, but I think that they had liked me and they had suggested me to the producers. And it was you know, for early on in my career, it was pretty amazing to actually get offered something. And it was a two-part role. And I played kind of this wild model who kind of was attracted to Grant Cho's character and attracted to Daphne Zuniga's character. And she's sort of bisexual. And that was kind of like, that was kind of new, you know, that was kind of out there for early 90s, you know, to show that. They were all beginning to sort of start to show that kind of thing on TV shows. So it was great fun, and the cast was amazing, and the crew was great fun. And you know, it was already a well-oiled machine at that point. So when you come into a show like that, when it's everyone's already established and it's all sort of running smoothly, it's pretty great.
Cool.
But yeah, it was really fun, really fun character.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, in Melrose Place, there was just nothing but crazy shenanigans going on left, right, and center in that show. So, yeah.
A lot of crazy shenanigans, yes.
But the first time I actually saw you, because like I say, I was only born in 81, so the first time I saw you was Weird Science. So, you know, me and my mates from school, we started watching the show because, I mean, as 15-year-old boys, it's just every boy's dream, essentially, is the...
That's what it was named at, 15-year-old boys.
I know. I was your demographic, so 100%. So I'm just curious how that show came to be for you. How did you get involved with Weird Science?
Well, you know what? Funny enough, I was actually flying to the Gold Coast to do this show, Time Tracks. And I remember this is when, like, you got hard copies of scripts. And I remember thinking, I hadn't really done that much comedy, actually, at that point. So I wasn't really sure if I could, you know, if I was really, could really do that well. And then when I got, but I liked it and I felt like it was a fun character and I'd seen the movie and, you know, thought it was a great concept for show. So when I got back from Australia, I met with the producers and it was a very long process. I probably went in maybe 8 or 9 times. And the last sort of time was for the network and it was narrowed down to 2 actresses at that point. And the rest of the cast was already cast. So I got to sort of do that auditioning process reading with them, so it was very helpful. And it was just one of those meant to be things, I think. It was just meant to be. I mean, it was definitely a hard gig to get because they had seen like everybody, every actress in town, I think, and they were kind of trying to emulate Kelly LeBrock but not completely.
Yeah,
at one point I was gonna maybe do my British accent because I grew up in England, and I mean, I don't really have a British accent anymore, but at that point it was a little bit stronger.
Yeah.
But then we all felt like it would be too much, like I'm trying to copy Kelly.
Yep.
So I ended up just, you know, and she kind of, you know, the nice thing about doing a long-term TV show is that you get to kind of grow with that character as the episodes develop. And it was such a fun character. I mean, she was really like a kid in a way. You know, she was... even though she was programmed with this very smart brain and she was kind of like one of the boys, and I kind of played her as if everything that she was experiencing in a way was for the first time. So there was a sort of childlike quality to her, but there was also, you know, there was a kind of edgy quality to her as well. And there was also a sweetness to her. So I got to, and then I got to play different characters within Lisa.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of, you know, some episodes she'd be a teacher or she'd be, you know, some other thing. And so I got to sort of play different characters within being Lisa. And it was a dream. It was really amazing.
And you said you'd seen the film before you'd heard about them doing the TV show. So you kind of knew what you were sort of getting into. So you didn't really have to do a lot of research, I guess, because seeing the film sort of gives you the brief of what you need to do, I guess.
Yeah, I had seen the film, you know, when it came out in the mid 80s.
That's right.
I'd only seen it once, but and then I didn't watch it like right before I started the auditioning process because I didn't want to sort of like watch her performance too much and sort of feel like I had to get swayed by that.
Yeah, you don't want to
copy.
But
I did. Yeah. Yeah, but I did want to, you know, emulate the feeling of the show, the feeling of Weird Science. And so I tried to incorporate what my memory of it and also what was on the page of the script, the TV version of it.
Well, I guess that must be tricky then, because I mean, on one hand, you do need to stay sort of true to the character, but then on the flip side, you don't want to be the same because then they'll go, it's just the same. So it's kind of like a really tricky, I'd not thought of that until you just said it, but yeah, it's kind of a tricky balancing act for you, isn't it? So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you're going to bring your own essence to it. You know, I mean, you can't completely, you know, emulate somebody else's performance because, you know, you have your own personality that's going to kind of creep into a performance, I think, anyway.
Yep.
But yeah, no, it was a great experience. I look back so fondly on those 4 years. I really do.
Now you've also done a few films with the Farrelly brothers, which obviously I'm a comedy nerd, so clearly I love the Farrelly brothers. Now, my number one question would have to be, I've always wondered, because I've never spoken to someone who's had two directors at the same time before. I'm just curious how that works. So, I mean, does one work with the crew, one work with the cast? Because obviously the number one thing I'm thinking of is, how is it not confusing for you? Because you're getting one message and then a second message comes through. Or like, how do they make it so that everything's nice and clear and balanced and you know exactly what to do and when to do it and all that sort of stuff?
That's a great question. I mean, they work very well together. Peter is much more, works with the actors more. He's sort of the director that would discuss with the actors and it'd be more, Bobby is more sort of at the monitor and sort of behind the scenes. And he's very much, you know, Peter and Bobby would confer with each other as to what they wanted, but Peter is the one that kind of conveys all that to the cast and to the crew as well. I mean, Bobby, not that Bobby's not outspoken and doesn't have his opinions, but he was just more behind the scenes. I mean, not behind the scenes, but you know what I mean? Like Peter is the one that's a little bit more, just the relationship with the actors in terms of performance. And
I would imagine, I mean, they've done a lot of, I mean, from my understanding, they've pretty much grown up and working together. Well, obviously they're brothers, but I mean, like they've worked together all throughout. So they would have it down to, like I said, a well-oiled machine as, you know, they'd have a chat and then Peter would go off and chat to you guys and Bobby would probably go and chat to, you know, the cinematographer or the lighting guys or whatever. And that sort of
is. Exactly. I mean, Kingpin was only their second movie, so they were still sort of, you know, fairly. I mean, I think that they, you know, they've been working together as writers and for a long time. So, you know, obviously they're brothers and their family was very involved too. I don't know if people know this, but like most of the Farrelly brothers movies, they have their friends and family in cameo roles.
Okay.
So it's really feels like, their mom and their dad, when he was like, we're in the movies and, you know, a lot of their friends. And so it really feels like this family feeling when you're on a set of the Farrelly brothers. I know that sounds sort of corny, but it really does. You feel like this camaraderie and just this team that's really supportive of each other. I mean, you usually find that on most sets because you're sort of in this thing together for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
But with the Farrelly brothers, you really feel, you just, they make you feel like you're one of their family members. Amazing.
That's very cool. Very cool indeed. So look, obviously, for those who have watched a Beer Nuts Productions film, they would know I sort of slant right to the probably more outrageous side of the scale when it comes to our comedy projects. And the actors are sometimes a little bit freaked out because they don't realise how serious I take a fart joke and all that sort of stuff. And I would imagine the Farrelly brothers are kind of the same, you know, because it takes a lot of work to make a good toilet joke, you know what I mean? Like, it's a serious business doing this silly comedy. So it was that something that kind of sort of surprised you? Like, especially, I mean, with Kingpin, I mean, there's some really, really funny bits in there. I love that film. And it's just, I would imagine some of the more outrageous scenes in there, you're like, and they're, you know, fine tooth comb. And you're like, was that sort of a little bit of a surprise and a shock to you?
Yes, actually, because when I read the script initially, I loved it. But, you know, obviously a lot of it is visual funniness.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's in your imagination as you're reading the script. And a lot of the sort of gross out humor aspects of it are kind of happen on the fly. Like the scene where he's punching my boobs, you know, in the parking lot, that was not in the script. And they just sort of decided. So a lot of times they would just sort of decide on the day, like, oh, this could be, you know, they're very creative and spontaneous. I mean, some of it was in the script, but there were certain things that weren't. So you had to kind of like go with it, you know, because I didn't know about the breast beating scene initially. And when Peter told me about it, I'm like, is that going to work? That sounds really strange. but you have to kind of take a leap of faith and trust them. And I did, obviously. And it is really funny. So yeah, a lot of that really kind of outrageous visual humor. Some of it was thought out and some of it was just added spontaneously.
And I suppose going back to your point of them being sort of a family sort of vibe, they've had you back to work in other, in another one of their films. So, I mean, they obviously, they're loyal kind of guys. You know, if you do a good job and they like you, I always have the same opinion with the actors I work with. I mean, if someone does a good job for me, then why wouldn't I hire them again? It seems foolish not to, you know what I mean? So they obviously, you guys obviously got along well and they've had you back for a few other bits and pieces.
Yes. I mean, I think that's exactly right. I think it's nice to have Woody and Peter were roommates, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Years before. So that, yeah, I mean, it's always nice when you know someone, you know, before you're going to start to work with them, because then you know who you're dealing with. So I think that, yeah, there are a lot of directors and producers who like to work with actors that they've worked with before. I mean, I feel like most of the work I do is with people that I worked with before, have some kind of relationship with. And it's understandable because it just makes it not that it's not okay to work with people you don't know, obviously, it's nice when you already have that built-in relationship.
No, absolutely. I can fully appreciate that 100%. I was also just wondering, during your career, obviously, of being, a model and an actor and all those times on set with the whole Me Too sort of thing that's been going on, has there ever been a situation, especially, I suppose, when you were a young model where, you felt uncomfortable on a shoot or on a set for any kind of reason? And what did you do anything about that? Like, how did all that transpire? Or have you been one of the lucky ones who were? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very good question, a very deep question. And I had my share of, incidents which were very uncomfortable.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was very young when I started, I did Spies Like Us. I was only 18. It's hard. It's still hard for me to talk about some of that stuff.
We don't have to.
I actually went on the record with a couple of things, but when the whole Me Too movement started, but it's a very hard thing to navigate as a young woman in this business, because you really, you're inexperienced and you're put in situations that are where you can be taken advantage of. And it's an aspect of the business that is not pretty. And I think that it's definitely been, it's changing now a lot. I think that it's much more awareness of it. So I think that that's been a good change for sure.
Absolutely.
But yeah. No, I had some very difficult situations to navigate when I was younger.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about that. I really am. I am curious though, in regards to, now I'm sure you've auditioned for many, 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 many roles over your career. Is there a role that you were close to getting that we might know about, a famous role, and we think, oh, we had no idea, obviously, you auditioned for it, and you're sitting back going, oh, damn it, I wish I had got that. Like, has there been a role that, you were really close to getting that you wished they had have just chosen you for whatever reason?
Oh my gosh, yes, there is. I mean, nothing that's sort of like iconic, except I'm sure you've heard the story about that I was the original Xena.
Yes.
Which, Xena, which became like an iconic character. I mean, that was TV, but, and that I was actually cast in, and I ended up getting sick and I couldn't make it. And Lucy Lawless ended up taking my, stepping in for me. And that was meant to be, I think, because she ended up marrying Rob Tappert, the showrunner, and they, been together ever since, and they have kids. And so I kind of feel like, oh, well, I was supposed to get out of the way for that. I was very, very close to getting a movie, a Robert Altman movie, which I was very excited about. But it's not like a movie that many people would know about. It was called The Gingerbread Man with Kenneth Branagh. And I just wanted so badly to work with Robert Altman. And that was like, so close to getting that one. And then there was another role that I very close to getting. There was a lot of roles that I was close to getting. But another one that comes to mind is a movie called The Edge with Anthony Hopkins and Alec Baldwin.
Okay.
That was something that was, I mean, not that that wasn't like a, you know, sort of mind blowing role or anything like that, but it was just something I remember being upset about that when it didn't go my way.
Well, what would you say to then young actors who might be listening to this and who were in that situation like you were, where they're so close to getting a role and they're just really bummed because, you know, they really wanted to do this role? What would be your advice to young actors out there who might be listening?
Well, you know, I just think you have to ultimately just let it go, because sometimes things happen for a reason and some roles are just not meant to go your way. Like I said, with the thing with Lucy Lawless and Xena, I mean, I kind of honestly, you know, not to get woo-woo about it, but I kind of feel like the universe like had to get me out of the way for that connection to happen, because who knows if that connection would have ever happened. So sometimes there's things that are out of your control or out of your understanding or knowledge that can, you know, determine a path for somebody else.
Yes.
So I think that you just have to keep at it. Like, you can't get so disappointed that it sort of kills your drive and passion.
So for young people out there who might be listening, could you give a little bit of advice in regards to auditioning and the audition process?
What's really weird now is that there's like no in-person auditions. It's like that was even starting to change before the pandemic. There was a lot of self-tapes and a lot of everything done online. But in the old days, when you'd go into a room, I would just always try and just do as much relaxation as possible, because if you go into a room and you're feeling nervous, it's going to affect your performance and how you relate to the people in the room. So I would just always work on whatever techniques I needed to do. For me, it was like, you know, mini meditations or just some kind of yoga or calming meditation the morning of. And then before I walked in the room, I would just do some deep breathing. For me, that was always something I had to battle, was just nervousness.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of actors feel that. But it's just also a trust. Definitely prepare your material, but then also once you get in the room, you have to be in the moment, and you know, sometimes things you planned in your mind won't happen in the room, and you have to really connect with the person you're reading with. Hopefully that's an actor and not just a reader or a casting director, because obviously you get more, you know, a lot of acting is about listening.
Yes, yeah.
And about reacting to the person that you're in the scene with. So obviously that's easier if it's an actor.
Yeah, well, it's funny you should mention that, because I saw an interview with Michael Caine, the very famous English actor, and he actually said that 90% of acting is listening. So and reacting.
Yes,
so
it really is.
Yeah,
it really is. I mean, and that takes a while to really get, because I think when you're starting out acting, you know, you want to perform and you kind of feel like it's on you, but it really is about listening and your reaction to the other person.
Yeah, no,
so then the more experience you get, the easier that becomes. But in an audition process, it's, you know, I mean, the camera, I mean, most auditions are taped or, you know, filmed. So they're going to look at that, plus the memory of you being in the room, which is what we don't have anymore, which I think is really disappointing, because I think that there's, you know, in some ways, because everything's online now, you're being judged only on the performance. Whereas sometimes when you go in into a room and there'd be lots of people in there deciding, everyone's going to have a different opinion. And they're going to also base it off of your own energy as who you are, not just the role you're about to
that's
perform.
That's absolutely right. So that's why, like with a Beer Nuts Productions film, I'm old school. I always get them in and I always like to have at least a 2 or 3 minute chat with the actor to make sure that they're on my wavelength. They understand. It's not.
Yeah.
It's just not a matter of if they can. I've got to be able to work with them. You know, I'm directing them, so I've got to know that I can actually work with the person. So their performance is 80% of it, but then the second 20% is what they are as a person, and if they're a cool dude or if they're a pain in the ass, you get to know that as well. Yeah. So it's not just all about performance for me when I'm casting for one of my films. 100%. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's good to hear from that side, because I agree. It's like it's got to, you just know, I think, you know, within like 5 minutes if you're on the same page.
Absolutely.
Or if you're compatible. And that is exactly, it's not just about performance, because the experience of making a movie is almost more than the actual finished product of the movie. You know what I mean? Like it's the experience you have making the movie that I always remember. I remember that more than, you know, the, if the finished product turns out great, then that's amazing. That's an asset. But that's, you know, sometimes I've done movies that are really not great, but I had an amazing time doing them. And then I've done other things that are, were a terrible experience. They're not terrible, but like a difficult experience. And then the thing is amazing. Like the finished movie or TV thing is amazing. So it can, for me, it's like what I remember now is the experience of making the movie over the actual movie, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Now we've run way over time. Thank you so much for this.
Okay.
But before we go, is there anything that you've got coming up that we need to, we need to mark in our calendars so that we don't miss any upcoming work?
Yeah, well, I did, before the pandemic, I did these two projects. One is actually a really interesting movie called 39 Weeks, and it was following the real-life pregnancy of this wonderful actress, producer, writer called Selena Ringle. Mm-hmm. And it was actually, she filmed the whole thing like in real time, like, you know, like the same as that Boyhood, except not over 12 years, over a pregnancy, over 9 months.
Yeah.
And then they incorporated the pandemic into the story, and it's really quite beautiful. So that I'm really excited about, but I'm not sure what the release date is. And then I did another movie called Courting Mom and Dad with Scott Baio.
Okay.
And that's coming out, I believe, in the next couple of months on a platform called PureFlix.
Okay.
But yeah, this year has been just so strange because, you know, production's been somewhat halted. It's sort of starting back up again here and there, but it's all, you know, obviously 2020 is such a strange year. So yeah, I'm not really yeah. And I have a couple of things coming up that I'm supposed to be doing next month. So I'm excited to be back on a set again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, look, Vanessa, thank you so much for coming on board our Beer Nuts Productions podcast. I genuinely appreciate your time over there in Malibu. And thank you again. And best of luck with the new projects coming up.
Thank you so much. And you're so welcome. And good luck to you and Beer Nuts Productions.
Thank you so much. So, ladies and gentlemen, that is the Beer Nuts Productions podcast for this week. Make sure you like and subscribe and leave a nice comment. That would always be appreciated. And beernutsproductions.com for all your entertainment needs. So that's it for now, and we'll speak to you next week. Thank you very much.